never dreamed that you would change my world forever. But here we are, I'm ready to conquer. Ready to fight injustice like I'm fighting monsters. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. Just call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky.
Wednesday morning, everybody. It is 10 a.m. on October 16th. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and this is KDLL Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. I know that's not our usual Kenai Conversation music, but I kind of dig that one. It sets the whole Adventure Talks stage. So this week, we are off to Scotland on our bicycles. Well, on via planes and automobiles and, of course, other logistical hurdles that it takes to go on an international trip like that. And our guides for this week are Matt and Sarah Pahala. And in the studio today, we have Mr. Matt Pahala. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Yeah, Jenny, thanks for having me.
So tell us all a little bit about where you and Sarah went.
Yeah, so we went to Scotland and we biked the Hebridean Way, which is the Scottish cycle route 780. It's on the Outer Hebride Islands, and it goes from the island of Vattersea, the southernmost island, to the butt of Lewis, which is the northernmost point of the island of Lewis. And over that course, it's about 180 miles. If you do a little bit of extra credit, you can get 200 easily. We did a little bit more extra credit, and after we finished the route, we backtracked and then went over to stay at a bothy in Manjursta, which is sort of the middle of island of Lewis, and then to the west.
Yeah, you're saying words. Yes. I lost you on the bothy and the...
I would liken a bothy to a public use cabin.
Okay, thank you.
Traditionally, they were shelters that were in the wilderness that either the peat cutters or the sheep herders would stay in, especially if they got caught in inclement weather. So it was a place where you could go and warm up and stay the night, have a meal, and then get back to work.
Awesome.
So that's what a bothy is. Now they're mostly used for, like I say, kind of a public use cabin. Most of them are free to stay in. The one that we stayed in is a little bit of a special case because it's tied to a nonprofit organization that is in remembrance of an aid worker who was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. She was taken captive by the Taliban, and the U.S. forces went in to rescue her, and in the attempt, her life was taken. So it's kind of an emotional thing, really. I get a little bit choked up after meeting her parents. And I mean, they started this foundation to raise money and help out children and women in Afghanistan.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, it's kind of a big thing. And so in the whole planning of the trip, once we found that bothy and read about it and found out about the foundation, we decided for sure we were going to incorporate that in some sense.
Even though a little out of your way, it sounds like.
It was, yes. It was about 56 extra miles that we were ready to not have to bike.
There comes that point in every trip where you're ready to not have to go the extra 56 miles.
Yes.
But
yes.
That's retroactive fun, I think is what we call that.
Exactly. But it was well worth it because that is some of the most stunning shoreline and landscape of the island. So I was, after we were well into it, I was glad that we did it.
Nice. Yeah, sometimes the unplanned or the less planned elements of a trip end up being the most memorable for good reasons or for bad reasons.
Absolutely.
But that sounds like a good jog. So what is happening here today? I am talking with Matt about kind of the planning and the logistics and how the trip came about. Sarah, of course, has work responsibilities and wasn't able to be in here live today at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday. Completely understandable. But you both are going to be at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center tomorrow night, Thursday, October 17th at 6:30 p.m., sharing more stories from your trip, but also photos and video, too.
Yeah, we cobbled together a pretty good slideshow, I think, and also from the GoPro footage that I took from my handlebars, got some decent footage that not all of it was covered in raindrops and, completely blurred, but there is definitely some of that, too. Logistically, going into it, it did take a fair amount of planning, and initially, we were just going to go to Scotland. And
as you do, wouldn't you just want to go to Scotland? You?
We were going there to meet up with some friends from Denmark. And they're friends that are the parents of a Rotary exchange student that we had several years ago. And they've become really, really close friends of ours. So when we were on our honeymoon, we visited with them. And they had just returned from a trip to Scotland doing some whiskey tasting. And
again, you know, as you do
in Scotland, you taste the Scotch whiskey. And I happen to appreciate a fine Scotch whiskey. So at that time, we decided at some point we should travel together in Scotland and go on some whiskey tasting adventures. So they had their dates when we could meet up with them. And we had a few weeks before that. And we decided that doing some more adventurous things that they might not be interested in would be appropriate, and that would be the right time. So it happened. We were planning for right after school ended, which I think school ended May 22nd. We had our tickets for May 23rd. And the plan was to first go to Scotland, fly into Scotland, and spend up close to a week kayaking the Inner Hebride Islands, and then return to Oban, and then take the ferry out to the Outer Hebrides and do the bike ride.
Because folks may or may not know this about you, but in one of your, in your main iteration, you're a chiropractor in town, but in one of your other iterations, you are a kayaking instructor.
Yes. And so Scotland, you could consider Scotland the mecca for sea kayaking, with all the inner islands and the currents and the North Atlantic. It's amazing, apparently.
And here we go.
Yes. So with Sarah's busy schedule, a lot of the planning was left up to me, and I had come up with this wonderful itinerary. Like I say, there was going to be close to a week of kayaking at the on the outset, and had everything planned, had a guide set up. He was going to had boats for us and a lot of equipment, so we didn't have to bring absolutely everything with us. And we got to Anchorage the early morning, or I guess late morning of the 23rd. We're standing in line and kind of chatting with the people behind us. And we get up to the front at the ticket counter and hand them our stuff. And the lady's doing some clackety-clack stuff on the computer. And it's taking a little bit of time, but we're just, Sarah and I are chatting and we're happy and things are good. And she's like, hey, wait a second, I need to go grab my supervisor, which is never anything you want to hear at the airport.
No.
Supervisor comes over.
They're never coming out to say, I just want to tell you I really like your picture and your ID.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Never
so
what
the
is.
Supervisor comes over and she does some clackety clack stuff on the computer. And she goes, oh, it's been doing this all day. No problem. I'll just overwrite it. And I'm like, all right, great. Perfect. Just what I want to hear. And she does some more clackety clacks. And then there's a And then the moment of truth comes where she says, Mr. Pahala, do you have your other passport? And I say, nope, that's my passport, the only one they gave me. And she said, yeah, well, this one expired a month ago.
Oh.
Yeah. So that happened. The funny thing, if you want to, you know, take it that way, is that about a month before we left, I literally made Sarah show me her passport to prove that hers was in fact valid. So now we have a rule that I'll show you mine if you show me yours, because I obviously didn't look at mine.
Oh, the hubris.
Yes. So that put a whole new spin on things. And so this was 3 hours before the flights boarded, because we got there early.
You're well prepared. You're organized. Exactly. You've got this down.
Exactly. So we immediately called the airlines, and they were kind of like, well, yeah, it's too close to boarding to really do a change for just a change fee. So we kind of ate it a little bit. But at that point, it was, do I pull out the credit card and just, you know, suck it up and pay whatever I have to pay? Or do we lose everything at this point? So we found some tickets that weren't so bad a few days later, and that gave us time to do the whole passport thing, which, if you need a passport last minute, you just have to go to a regional passport office.
Which is where, Matt?
The closest regional passport office is in Seattle. So
oh, but for the grace of remembering to check our passports, go all of us. So good reminder to any of us who think we're just going to up and take off on international travel.
Exactly. But at the regional passport office in Seattle, everything went pretty smooth. I basically used all of my frequent flyer miles to get us to Seattle. And we were there the next morning. As the office opened up, I had called and set up an appointment. They got me right in. All you have to do is have the application filled out with your old passport and proof that you indeed have a flight that is within a month, I believe. So that went really smoothly. I figure that we were where we were supposed to be at the time we were supposed to be there, because in the airport, I was first responder for someone who had a fall going down a ramp, and it was like melon hitting the floor, kind of head injury. So, you know, there was a little bit, like, I was where I was supposed to be at that moment. And at the passport office, as I was leaving with my passport, I met my doppelganger. So
really,
it was really funny. We walked in, and this guy was just ahead of us getting off of the elevator, and he just kind of went to line, and I was right behind him. And looking at the back of him, I'm like, man, that guy looks familiar. And he turned, and I saw this profile. I'm like, oh, that looks like me, I think. And so Sarah went and sat down, because you're not allowed to, like, only the person who's being served can go up to the counter. So I looked over at her, and she's like, he looks just like you. Like, and then so we get our number and we sit down, and they call both of us up at the same time, because they're calling two numbers at a time. So I'm standing right behind him, and Sarah's like, tell him.
That sounds like that could be trouble in a passport office.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Trying to pull a fast one somehow.
But it's kind of funny, because we ended up riding the elevator down and met him, and I got a picture with him so I can prove that I have a twin out there that lives in Portland.
Where was he off to that he couldn't get to?
He was going to Japan.
Oh, yeah.
The funny thing with him is he had done the same thing like 10 years earlier when his other passport expired. So I'm learning from his mistakes.
Well, if you guys really want to look like super frequent world travelers, you should get a hold of that guy and exchange photos and pass them off as your own. So not only did you go to Scotland, you also went to Japan, as evidenced by all these selfies of me in Japan.
Exactly. So we got back to Alaska, and we spent 2 days in Talkeetna as a little bit of bonus, as waiting for our new flights to come up. Did a really nice fat bike ride around the trails there. It rained really hard, as it does in Talkeetna, and we thought that was a little bit of bonus training for Scotland.
Yeah.
And we were right. And then we flew out on the 31st. So we flew from Anchorage through Reykjavik, Iceland, to Glasgow. And because of the change in our travel plans, we ended up with a bonus day in Glasgow. Initially, we weren't going to have any time there. It was going to be get off the plane, get on the train. How it turned out, we had about a day, I would say. So we got in late afternoon, and we had found just an Airbnb type of thing and went and dropped all of our gear. And then we actually had a couple of friends that were in Scotland at the same time from the area, Dave Atchison and,
Cindy, I'm going to guess.
Cindy, okay. Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. The blanks you draw on the radio. Right? So we met up with them and we did a little bit of touring around Glasgow, which was really cool because the neat thing about Glasgow is there are all kinds of murals all over the city.
Oh,
and
nice.
So it's a neat way to kind of tour around the city and see the sites, find these murals around, and it takes you through a lot of different areas. So
murals, of course, being near and dear to Soldotna Rotary's heart. So
yeah, exactly. So we did that, and then the next day hopped on a train and took the train from Glasgow to Oban, where that's where we were based out of as far as picking up our bicycles, because we didn't travel with our own bikes. We rented bikes from Cycle Oban. And so we stayed the night there, loaded up the panniers, got ready. And essentially from there, we took the ferry out to the islands.
Nice. It almost sounds like your version 2 of this trip maybe was a better deal than version 1. I'm sure you were upset to miss out on the kayaking part of it, but that sounds like a very packed itinerary to do multi-sport in one trip and meet up with friends and have time to breathe once in a while.
Yes, I would agree with that. Our initial itinerary was a bit ambitious.
Yes, it sounds like.
And I would have to say that it was probably a little bit lucky that things happened the way they did, because there was a massive storm in the North Atlantic at the time. So what we were hoping to be a nice scenic sea kayaking adventure that maybe got us into some areas that were a little bit more technical, it would have been more like every person for themselves sort of weather. And I mean, it's a different kind of fun doing that kind of sea kayaking, but not exactly what we were looking for. The one thing I'm really disappointed about not doing the sea kayaking portion is that I really wanted to see the Corrie Vreken Whirlpool, which is the second largest marine whirlpool in the world. And on a big tide, it's just a torrent.
So, and were you planning on seeing this from a safe distance, or were you
there's actually a spot on the island of Jura where you can land and then hike up and overlook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rather
that was
than
the plan.
Experiencing firsthand the world's second. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you have that level of sanity. So in planning this trip, so this one kind of came about because you had some friends that were going to be in Scotland. You kind of wanted to be in Scotland. So that narrowed the focus to Scotland, obviously. But you and Sarah have taken other international trips and done other cool things. How do you go about finding trips like this? What resources are you kind of word of mouth? Are you looking on the internet? Are you looking in guidebooks? How do you do your kind of initial recon on where you're going to go and what you're going to do?
So I am a firm believer of using guidebooks. I think they're a great resource. And I also just like having print with me when technology fails. So I use the Lonely Planet. They have their Scotland guidebook was really good and very thorough. Helped us with planning where to base out of as far as the biking portion of it. That was a little bit nebulous how that came about. Initially, we were going to bike on the mainland, and I didn't even know that Route 780 existed. But I knew that we were going to go out of Oban because that's where we were going to kayak out of.
Gotcha.
So I contacted the bike rental shop in Oban, and just in the discussion with the owner, she suggested the Hebridean Way. She and her husband had done it the year before, and they were pretty excited about it, and after talking with me, she's like, this is what you're looking for. The mainland stuff is great, but that's more kind of biking beside a highway, like busy thoroughfares. And it does take you through really beautiful scenic Scotland, but it's not really the remote kind of cycling that we're looking for.
Kind of biking along Turnagain Arm versus maybe along Resurrection Pass Trail,
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly. So after she gave me that suggestion, I got on the internet and I did some research. And after looking at pictures and reading some description on the internet, we settled on that. And then from there, I found two books that were perfect for planning the trip. One of them is Spiral Bound and kind of weatherproof, and it has detailed maps that breaks it down into about 10-mile segments.
Oh, nice.
So it's sort of like the milepost for Route 780. And that was great because it had some history of the islands, and then it had these, you know, the scenic overlooks and things to do, places to eat, places to stay. And that was really, really helpful in planning how to approach it. So once we had the route figured out and started planning it that way, then it was, are we going to do this and camp along the way? Are we going to do this and get bed and breakfast or hotels? And that became a crux decision, because first of all, we didn't exactly know how far we were going to be able to make it every day.
Right. Yeah. That's so, the one, the benefit of camping is you get as far as you get and your home is right there.
Exactly. And so that's the approach we took, was that, especially with the Scottish Outdoor Access Code, which is, it's known as the right to roam, essentially means you can camp anywhere you want to.
Not private land. Yep.
You can cross anyone's private land and it's acceptable, which is sort of a Scandinavian approach to land rights. And which
you can't be a jerk about it, right? You
correct.
Can't litter, yeah. You can't cut down a bunch of trees, you can't.
Exactly, but yes, you'll be strongly reprimanded with that type of thing. But
in Scottish, no less.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it's pretty much open range for where to camp. So that was really easy. We ended up camping two nights in commercial campgrounds that had facilities. The third night, we were just out in the wild, kind of off the road, because it was time to not be biking. and then the fourth night, after we made it to the Butte of Lewis, we retraced our steps about 5 miles and stayed on the lawn at the Cross Inn, which they have a bar in the barn.
Oh,
the
there
back.
You go.
So it was like celebratory drinks, and then maybe we shouldn't go anywhere else. And the owners were really friendly. They had just purchased the inn and didn't have their permit to rent rooms yet. So, but they were really, really supportive of bikers, I guess you would say. And they were like, hey, we have that big patch of grass. Just set your tent up. So it was really nice. And so we just, that in one, gave us a place to stay, but two, it meant we didn't have to go anywhere. So there were a few more gin and tonics that night.
And what, like how far apart are lodges, if someone wanted to do this and do the actually have a place to stay option, is that spaced conveniently enough that you're not having to kill yourself every night to get to lodging? Like rural are we talking here?
I think that there would be enough lodging close enough together that you could do the ride with just about any kind of time period.
Okay.
So, I, going into it, had aspirations of averaging about 10 miles an hour on the bike.
Okay.
Like I said, there was this storm in the North Atlantic that would have made the kayaking kind of treacherous and not very much fun. Well, that storm was still there, and it was coming. It was a headwind the entire way.
Oh,
so,
that's unfortunate.
So my
50-50, and you guys lost.
Yeah, and the prevailing winds in that time of year is almost always from the south. It was just like we got there when the storm was there. So my goal of 10 miles an hour average went down dramatically. So that being said, I think going into it, if we would have booked lodging, we would have been toasted, because it would have, I would have had a lot more ambitious ideas of right. how far we could make it. So just having the ability to camp wherever was pretty great. And the campgrounds were spaced. The two commercial ones were very appropriate for distance wise, especially if there wouldn't have been the headwind. Rather than biking all day to get there, it would have been like bike 4 or 5 hours, get there, and then have some time to explore. So I would say we didn't have as much time to do some of the offshoots and explore some of the really cool places that the islands have, just because we were grinding on the road to get to the next place.
Nice. And so you're saying if you expanded the trek, you could cover 200 miles, which you guys did. How long is this route? I mean, did you do all of it, or did you do a portion of it?
We did all of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so the from the southernmost point on Vattersea to the northernmost point, the Butta Lewis, is...
That is the entire, okay.
Yes.
And how many islands does that encompass?
There are 10 islands with 7 causeways and 2 ferry crossings.
That was going to be my next question. How does one get between these islands?
Yeah, so we took the ferry out of Oban, which is a several-hour ferry ride across, and then... landed at Castle Bay on the island of Barra. And that, what happened to be kind of a postponed, that the departure was postponed multiple times that day. So we got in after dark.
Just weather-wise, so, I'm assuming, with the storm?
A few things. I'll go into that a little bit more okay. at the talk. But yeah, I mean, weather and just ferry schedules. I mean, that's the way it is. But so we biked south and then started there on Vattersea. The next morning we got up and made it Vattersea through the island of Barra, which both of those are relatively small islands. The island of Barra is really cool because it has some of the features of all of the islands. So if you only could do one island, that would be the one to do, they say. Because it has some hills, it has some plains, there's some beaches. Really a lovely island. But at the end of that part, that's where your first ferry crossing is, from Barra to Eriskay. And Eriskay is a cool island in the fact that when Bonnie Prince Charlie returned to Scotland, he landed on the beach on Eriskay. So that would have been in the Jacobite Rebellion days, and a little bit of the history of the islands there, a little bit of importance. But it's really crescent, really beautiful white sand crescent beach that would have been nice to spend a little bit of time there if we didn't have to put another 40 miles on that day.
Only 40 miles. Well, we are talking to Matt Pahala. It is Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. We're coming up at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, refill some coffee and water cups here. And coming up tomorrow, of course, Matt and Sarah are going to be at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center at 6:30 p.m. with more stories and photos and some video footage of their trip to the outer... Oh my gosh. I know how to say it, but I've talked myself into not knowing how to say it. The Hebridean way.
Hebridean.
Oh, dang it. Welcome to live radio, folks. I'm Jenny Nyman. We will be back in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
I never dreamed that you would change my world forever. But here we are, I'm ready to conquer. Ready to fight injustice like I'm fighting monsters. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. Just call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad.
pressure. In a land of buried minds and buried treasure. And this could be my life's adventure. But I will take it, whether it be pain or pleasure. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. But if you call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky. Wherever we go, we fly. Forever we know adventures in the air tonight. Together we touch the sky. Wherever we go, we fly. Forever we know adventures in the air tonight. Our dreams will come alive.
We are back. This is, of course, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And we are taking over the Kenai conversation with Adventure Talks today. I'm Jenny Nyman, and I'm in the studio with Matt Pahala. How's it going, Matt?
Really, really good.
So Matt, local chiropractor, local Soldotna Rotary, past president, local paddling instructor, and he and Sarah went and took a pretty cool bike trip through the Hebridean Way.
I'm just not gonna
I know it, and I psych myself out every time.
Well, it's been so many versions have been thrown out there over the last few days.
We've struggled with that one here at KDLL.
I think I'm having a hard time remembering because I've heard so many versions.
So, 200 plus mile kind of backcountry bike trip through the Outer Islands. And this is off the northwest coast of Scotland. Northwest?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. And you guys went end of May into June.
Yes. So the bike trip was June 1st through the 5th.
Okay. So you and Sarah sound like the kind of travelers that I aspire to be. I'm not quite there. I've learned this lesson many, many, many times, and yet I still kind of get caught in this trap of too much planning, I feel like, is a bad thing. So I'm going to go somewhere. I've got all this time and money invested in it, and I want it to be the most awesome it can possibly be, meaning I want to do the most awesome things, stay at the most awesome places, take the most awesome side trips every single day. It gets so exhausting trying to make sure that your trip is going to be the most awesome while you're sitting at home still planning it. And then you get a little too locked into, but this is my itinerary and this is my route and this is supposed to be the most awesome. And then you get there and of course, weather and timing and headwinds and distances and other cool things to see, you know, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit if you're not giving yourself the leeway and the flexibility to sort of roll with what you're doing. So how much planning did you do before you guys left versus how much just kind of wing it and take advantage of what was actually happening while you're over there?
We did a lot. I would say we did a lot of planning, but there was always the idea that we need to be flexible because we really don't know. And the thing about this bike route is it's really new as far as being an established route that they advertise as like, come and do this bike ride. It was established in 2016.
Oh, dang. Yeah. Super new. Okay.
After professional cyclist Mark Beaumont did the route in 24 hours. He had to hire two boats to get him across where the ferry crossings are.
He's not waiting for the ferries.
No, no, he wasn't. But that popularized or brought attention to the potential for this bike ride. And then they being the Scottish National Bike Route Committee or whatever, they essentially invested a little bit of money into some Route 780 signs. And
voila, it's and a bike route.
And then it's a bike route. Yeah. So there's, I would say that the infrastructure for supporting cyclists is improving, but it's still, you're self-supported for sure.
So with that in mind, how did you guys go about packing?
We, going into it, knowing that we were going to camp, we wanted a tent that was both weatherproof enough that we wouldn't get soaked in Scotland where they say it rains, and also big enough that we could get everything inside of it, but also light enough that we weren't, hauling this massive tent around.
And what was this magical tent that you settled on?
Yes, we have a teepee.
And interesting.
With just the shell, it's a 6-person shelter, and then there's an inner tent that's a 4-person shelter. So
plenty of gear room in the vestibule.
Plenty of gear room. Yep, we could cook inside of it. You can stand up.
Oh,
or at least
nice.
A person my size can stand up inside the tent, and you can put up the inner tent and take it down underneath.
Oh, that's the shelter. A nice
yeah.
feature.
So, I would not use it. That would be the tent I use again if I were to go again. It was great. So we had that, and it's a big shell. It came in two bags basically, but it could fit in 2 5-liter dry bags.
Okay.
So that's the other thing, is everything had to be watertight.
Right.
So we had panniers that we rented along with the bikes. We fit all of our gear in that. And then each of us had 2 dry bags bungeed on the top of the panniers, essentially. One of the logistic things that we had to deal with is that Sarah has some food sensitivities, and we knew going into it, we were probably going to have to bring more food with us that she for sure could eat than maybe other people would have to.
Right. Rather than just take your chances at whatever you find along
yeah,
the way.
Yeah. So we got a couple boxes of Heather's Choice. 'Cause they are all, just about everything that she produces is within Sarah's diet parameters. So that was really nice, but we had essentially one pannier that was just, dehydrated foods and that's essentially what we ate. There are, a few grocery stores on the route. So we were able to get some fresh stuff also. And, as we ate things and more room was made in the panniers, we packed those in.
So brought a stove then as well?
So
or is that
we
something?
Did, yep. And so I got one of the MSR reactor stoves that has the canister that locks in. It's very fuel efficient. It boils water in like 90 seconds or something. So we brought that with us, and we had to find a fuel canister in Oban before we left, which ended up being more of a challenge than I thought. And so there was one outdoor store that we saw along the, just off the sidewalk, and went in and asked them, and they had this massive fuel canister that would have lasted like 2 months probably. And you're like, do you have anything smaller? We're just going for
not going out sheep herding for the season.
Yeah.
Just,
and she said,
week trip.
The salesperson said, no. And we said, is there anywhere else in town to get these? No. So we said to ourselves, maybe we can find something better. And it ends up that right around the corner, there was a competitor that had exactly what we needed. So it was one of those. But yeah, so we brought our own stove, of course, sleeping bags and sleeping pads. Going into it, I talked to a friend who had been in Scotland for some sea kayak instructor leadership training. And I said, if you could bring one thing with you, what would you bring? And he, without a pause, said coffee.
Oh, wise man.
Because in, I don't know if it's this way in all of UK, but I get the sense maybe the coffee they have is just dehydrated instant coffee pouches and really disgusting. And so I'm the type of person that can drink a pot of coffee in the morning before I even, you know, start to think about addressing my day. So, so I brought a lot of just pre-ground coffee and a collapsible pour-over cone, and I was very happy that I did.
Comforts of home.
Exactly. My friend's wife that suggested the coffee, her suggestion, because I asked them both, if you could bring one thing, what would it be? And she said a pillow. And I had a pillow packed, like my camping pillow, but at the last minute that got nixed because of just space. And I think I did okay without it, but there were definitely a couple nights that I would have
been cozier.
Yeah, my rolled up fleece coat wasn't quite cutting it.
Yeah, that's often one of the go by the way. Not heavy certainly, but can definitely bulk out a bit.
I know. I think everyone always like the pillow is always one of the first things yeah. that gets eliminated from the thing, but. When we were going, when we were packing, we essentially had two of those bottomless pit duffels from, you know, I think North Face or whatever, you know, just like put all of your stuff in this bag. And we each had one and it was to the top fill for sure.
And trying to shuffle that over onto your bike is a little more challenging as
yes.
well.
So, and that's like everything had to go from there to fit into the panniers and the dry bags. So anything that didn't fit, and we had some stuff that we intentionally were leaving back because we knew we were going to have this other half of our trip once
right.
we were done with the bike ride. So we left all that stuff with the bike rental place.
Oh, that's nice. They store things for you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the day we left Oban was, I think, the hardest rain I've ever witnessed. It rained so hard that my raincoat had puddles of rain in the pockets.
Oh, I've had that.
Like
goodbye cell phone.
Complete failure
yeah.
of raincoat for one. But yeah, before we even left Oban, we were soaked. And with that, the shoes that we were wearing that morning were soaked, and we had just threw them in our gear bag, and then we were gone for a week. And what happens to, you know, wet shoes when they're in an enclosed bag for a week isn't really great.
No.
No. So those shoes are now somewhere in the garbage in Scotland.
And what kind of safety gear, repair equipment, any emergency supplies?
Like I said, you're pretty much self-supported. There are two bike shops that I know of. I think there might have been a third bike shop somewhere. One of them is at close to the northernmost point on the island of Lewis, and the other one is in Barra.
So in between, you're mm-hmm. kind of on your own.
Yeah, so we definitely had our pocket tools and some patch kits and a tube and, you know, the things for some basic repairs. Fortunately, we didn't have to use them. However, the bikes that we rented, I think, were brand new because the season was just starting. And I think we put the first miles on it. So everything, by the end, everything was stretched out and wasn't shifting right. And they needed some serious TLC that was a little bit beyond my expertise in the field.
Well, that's a big decision, whether you're going to travel with a bike that you know and you're familiar with and comfortable with, or whether you're, which of course is a logistical ginormous pain because yeah. It's a big thing to have to, you know, check through baggage and cart around, put in the box, take out of the box, and who knows if it's going to show up and who knows if it's going to be damaged, versus the also terror of renting something that you have never ridden on before and you don't really know much about the shop. And
yeah. Going, that's one thing I would definitely change, is what the bikes we rented, at least. I think there was a little bit of a miscommunication between myself and the bike rental place, even though she recommended doing Route 780. She also thought we were going to do a bit of off-trail mountain biking along the way, which there is that option. So rather than having some kind of maybe a hybrid bike or like a gravel bike, they were 27.5 front suspension Cannondale mountain bikes that it was a great bike, but maybe not the perfect bike for being on the pavement most
right
of the time.
Probably a little heavier than was necessary,
a little bit heavier, a little knobbier tires than we needed. Definitely didn't need the front suspension, but you know, they had like 30 of those bikes. That was their bike fleet.
Okay.
You know, and then they did have some other ones going back. Like I say, if I could have found, I think a gravel bike would have been perfect, where you have that frame that's very similar to a road bike, but a little bit more clearance, some places to attach some bags and panniers and racks, but still light enough and fast enough that you're not wasting a lot of effort. Because when you are grinding into a headwind and then you get to places where that headwind switches and it's more of a crosswind, having the most economical bike, I think would have helped. It would have made it a little bit easier. I wouldn't get hung up on it though. I mean, we made do with what we had, and they worked.
You had two wheels and pedals and gears, yeah, and got yourself down the road.
The one thing I definitely, going back, would have changed, that I would have brought with us, are my own pedals, because I assumed that they would have clipless pedals for us, and they did not. So we had our bike shoes with our clips, but the pedals were just your standard run of the mill, comes with the bike. So that was another thing, that you get a little bit more economy for your efforts if you are more attached to your pedals. And it would have been easy to spin our pedals off and take them with, but we didn't.
Well, good things to keep in mind for anybody thinking about taking a bike trip, especially internationally, much less anywhere in the U.S. But that sounds like a area where you probably can't spend too much time making sure you're set up with what you need and what you want when you get there. Otherwise, Definitely. Deal with taking your own, which is a whole other realm of...
If we were doing it where we just went there and did the bike trip and then came home, I think taking my own bike would be a very viable option. I wouldn't have hesitated on that. But knowing that after we were done biking, and essentially we were supposed to kayak before also, it would have just been a hindrance and more difficult. So we opted with the rental, and it worked out. So I was happy. There were a couple other bike shops that I could have worked with that were on the islands that also logistically might have made it a little bit easier, but we did what we did and it worked. However, because we had to return to Oban, that did lock us into, once we got to the end of our ride, we had to get back to Castle Bay to get on the ferry to get back to Oban.
You weren't going to turn around, take advantage of the tailwind all 200 miles back.
I mean, we could have done it in like a day and a half, but no, we didn't. So what we ended up doing was hiring a shuttle that picked us up in Manjursta, which is where the Bothy was that we stayed in on that fifth night. And then they shuttled us. That first shuttle took us to the first ferry, and then we were met on the other side by his kind of business associate that took us the rest of the way to Barra.
Nice.
And then we spent the night in Barra, and then the next morning we were on the ferry back to Oban.
And while you were out and about on the route, did you have cell phone coverage? Did you have a way to get a hold of anybody? Did you even have like an emergency plan?
We had an international plan. We got the international package thing for our cell phone, and we had kind of spotty reception anytime that we were in a little bit larger area where there were, you know, I guess you'd call it a city. we would have some reception, but as far as for emergency, if something happened, we had our InReach with us. And so, you know, we were maybe a little bit exposed, but I don't think it wasn't too bad. There was enough traffic that if we would have needed a ride somewhere, eventually someone would have been by, and you know, not too long of a wait to to help us, I think.
And it sounds like the folks you met were pretty friendly and welcoming of bikers and tourists in general.
That was actually really nice. Biking around here, there are some times where you sort of feel some anger and frustration from people in motorized vehicles.
Definitely, at the least, do not want to assume that they're going to yield for you.
Yeah. I would say that they're very used to bikers on the islands and are very welcoming of that and are okay waiting. The thing about all of the roads over there is almost all of them are a single lane for both traffic going both directions, meaning like the road is about the width of our bike path.
Oh.
And then there's every alternating sides, there'll be a pullout. So if you encounter a vehicle going the opposite direction, whoever gets to the pullout first pulls off and waits. And then, so they're used to waiting.
Okay.
And it's, there was only one spot where we're on the island of South Oost, near the end of our first day of cycling. And it was torrential rain. And it must have been the island's version of rush hour because we're getting ready to cross on this causeway where we didn't have anywhere to get off of the road really. And cars were going passing us. And what we found out, what you're supposed to do is really own your lane. Where instead of biking on the shoulder, you bike right in the middle.
Because, it is my turn. I am going now.
Because in a car, if they see a spot and they're like, okay, I think I can make it, they're going to try. But they're okay waiting also.
Okay.
Like they don't get frustrated. But, you know, it's like it is when you're driving a car. Like, oh, I think I can make that. And, you know, it's a little unnerving when it's the first time you've ridden in that kind of a situation.
Understandably.
We got used to it, for sure.
Well, after how many days did it take you?
4 days to do Route 780, okay. And then the fifth day was extra credit.
Nice. Okay. And did you guys do any kind of training before? I mean, I know you both ride a whole bunch, but were you like looking at topography and thinking about what kind of biking it was going to be? You know, we should do some miles that'll get us ready for this sort of trip.
We had our trainers set up at the house, so we're on the trainers all through the winter, but I wouldn't say we put a lot of miles on the road, and we were reasonably in shape and ready for it. But another poor assumption was that we were going to make that like 10 miles an hour average and it would be a tailwind the whole time. So easy to do
in your living room. Not so much.
So I would say it was significantly more challenging than I thought it was going to be as far as difficulty. And it mostly came down to the headwind, but you combine that headwind with there were on the island of Harris, they call it the Harris Hills. I'm doing air quotes here, but it's, 200 meter elevation gain in just a little over a kilometer.
Ooh.
So that, it's steep.
That's, yeah.
It was a grind. You know, we found the one in one on the chain rings and we stayed there. We didn't ever have to get off the bike and push.
Oh, good. So, that's a mark of success. It is a long distance bike.
But there were a couple times where I don't know if you do this when you're cycling and you're going up and it's going up a hill and it's hard. And I just like start counting a cadence. You know, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. And if you can just get through that, then you make it eventually.
Yeah, I start fighting the voice in my head that tells me, dude, you could walk this faster. Are you really being that efficient at this point? Pretty sure you could get off and push faster than you were pedaling right
now. Yeah, exactly.
But there is a certain victory when you've made it up the hill and you're still on the bike.
It is. You know, what was really fun about the bike ride is that there were a couple of different groups of cyclists that started at the same time as we did. They were on the ferry with us over and we would just sort of hopscotch a couple of them. And one of the groups were these two older women that were, one of them was kind of a cyclist. The other one was like, I've never done anything like this before. I'm here with my friend. There was a point we met up with them in Tarbert on Harris, which is kind of the, I guess, unofficial capital of Harris. And she said that coming down the hill into the town, a gust of wind hit her and literally blew her across the road into the ditch. And she's just lucky a car wasn't coming at that time, because it was just like, she was blown off the road. So that happened.
Yikes.
There are, I didn't see any pictures, but there are stories of sheep being picked up by the wind and traveling 20 or 30 yards, kind of a sheep flying type of thing. So, it's windy.
Good to know. Be prepared.
Yeah.
Well, and we are going to hear and see more about this trip tomorrow night at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center at 6:30 p.m. Matt and Sarah is going to join us for that one. And that is free for KDLL members, or $5 for non-members. But we at KDLL like to think of non-members as future members. So you can also feel free to sign up for a membership at the event and get into future KDLL events for free as well.
How much does it cost to be a member?
You know, it's a donation of your choice, whatever you can spare for supporting public radio. We appreciate it. It's kind of more about just having the community and having the numbers of supporters than it is any, you know, if you have $1 million, you can feel free to donate $1 million. But we have not yet come across that magical member yet. So we appreciate any and all donations. And Matt Pahala, we appreciate you for being here today. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about the less picture-worthy elements of the trip. We're looking forward to seeing the scenery as well. Some of the photos you showed me so far are just beautiful over there.
Yeah, I'm excited to share, and thanks for being interested in hearing about the adventure.
Of course. Well, thanks for going on an adventure. We appreciate anybody out doing that. So I am Jenny Nyman. We're coming up on 11 a.m. So we're going to return to regular programming with On Point coming up here right at the top of the hour. Thanks again, Matt Pahala, for being here. We appreciate it. This has been Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And we hope to see all you listeners in person tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
You and me, we found adventure. I never dreamed that you would change my world forever. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. Just call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky. Wherever we go, we fly. Forever we know adventures in the air tonight. Together we touch the sky. Wherever we go, we fly. Forever we know adventures in the air tonight. Our dreams will come alive. In a land of buried mines and buried treasure, and this could be my last adventure, but I will take it, whether it be pain or pleasure. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad, but if you call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky, wherever